News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Thank you to Leanna. She explained to me that on the Bayway westbound, they've got the cars off to the side, but only one lane is moving, and it's backed up all the way to Daphne from about the middle of the Bayway. That's where that accident
and
is.
The accident in the left lane, I believe.
Right.
So it should, I believe,
right
unless things have changed,
only.
The right lane is the one moving. So.
Okay, sounds good. So there you, well, it doesn't sound good. It just sounds like we know what we're talking about. And now you have a better idea why you're backed up on the Bayway. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. What a day it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with, we were still on the air. And you grab some audio of Trump's address to everybody.
And it was another long address.
It was a long address over an hour?
Yeah. So he, and it's crazy, you know, people keep, especially the left, well, pretty much only the left, saying that he's lost it, man. Like, they're trying to say he's lost his mind, I guess completely forgetting what the last 4 years under Biden were like. But I know Whoopi Goldberg, and I saw several others tweeting yesterday, and they keep saying, 25th Amendment, have him pulled from office. He's completely lost his
mind.
That's crazy. But he, on Tuesday, did an hour 10 before taking questions from the White House press corps,
mm-hmm.
maybe an hour 20 before he started taking questions. It was basically 2 hours of him standing at the podium talking. And then yesterday, after traveling across the Atlantic, to Davos, stands in front of all of these big-time economic leaders of the world leaders.
Just the nerve alone to do that and know what he was about to say.
Yeah.
And also, so I was listening to a couple of British commentators. They were really good. They were breaking it all down. And so they talked about the way that he circles back around to things. And they're like, look, we've had this for 10 years. That's the way that he communicates.
Mm-hmm.
It's a certain you can hate Trump. That's fine. I don't care. I don't. But also, if you're going to criticize the way he communicates or say that it shows a lack of being all there mentally, you're wrong.
Because he's been doing that.
So they were saying, we have watched this for 10 years. And they were not super fans because they were just trying to call balls and strikes. They were commentators. Really good pair. It's a lady and a guy, and they were on from the Telegraph, I believe, but really, really succinct in their coverage of what went on over there and just the tension in that room and Trump being able to deliver like he did. And then by the end of the day, it looks like a deal.
Yeah, well, the Telegraph is about as fair as it gets over there. If they're from the Daily Mail talking about it, you're probably getting a little bit of a different spin, or we know the BBC.
It almost felt like a conservative.
They are. Yeah. They're more in line with and I believe that's a Murdoch-owned publication.
Okay.
Like the Wall Street Journal and Fox News.
Well, they're really good. I recommend them.
Yeah. So, I mean, he went absolutely after the Europeans for many of the same things that he's hit on previously. And remember Vance, when he addressed the vice president. When he had addressed them not that long ago, talking about how they're ruining their own countries with unfettered third world migration, all of these moves, like Trump said yesterday, the green new scam, as he calls it, and buying energy from Russia, which is propping up their war against Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And he just hammered them right to their faces again yesterday.
And nobody leaves the room because you leave the room, it will be noted. And so that was one of the things that the commentators were talking about. It's like look, I don't know anything. And I was just like, from Monday on, I'm like, the way this looks like it's going is he's got the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just a matter of tact.
So in that speech, probably the line that most people focused on had to do with Greenland. And he said, we're not going to militarily. He basically said, we could if we wanted to. We could easily take Greenland, but we're not going to.
When he said it in a way, exactly. And I might even said those words, but he said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it by force. But he didn't have to say it, really, but just hinted, like, we have the force.
And he said, America is the only country that can defend Greenland. None of you can defend it.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, you have the ownership and all this. And then it was a little bit later in the day where he announced he would not be following through on the tariff threat, the 10% tariff that would have gone into effect in early February, saying that he spoke with the NATO general, Secretary General Mark Rutte in Davos, and that they had come to a framework of a deal. And then we never really heard exactly what that framework is. There's some details that have been coming out here over the last, I don't know, 15 hours or so. But I think, you know, it all hinges on that. What does the deal look like when it's all said and done?
I think Rutte, I think that Rutte and Trump had things not completely all ironed out, but I think even before he arrived, he was going to blister those people in the audience one way or the other. That was part of, he had to get that off his chest. But I think he and Rutte probably were close to a framework before the day began. This is Rutte, and again, he's not spilling all the beans, but he's talking about what kind of a day it turned out to be.
I think tonight was a good night, and we have a good agreement to really start working on these issues. And that means that we both agreed, when you look at NATO and what NATO collectively can do to make sure that the whole Arctic region is safe, including Greenland, to work on that part. There's a lot of work to be done to make sure that we do basically everything needed on land, sea, and air to make sure that we protect that important part of the world and of NATO territory.
Trump likes that word too, framework.
Mm-hmm.
The framework.
And he likes the word deal better, but yes.
Right, you're right. Framework to Trump has been, it seems recently, okay, that's now off my plate. You guys finish it up, right? Mm-hmm. With Witkoff and Kushner, maybe Mario or Rubio, I should say. And so it's like, you guys got it from here.
Yeah.
And now I'll go on and create my peace corps, the peace, whatever.
Yeah, Gaza peace plan, peace board.
The peace board, yeah.
So asked earlier, you know, is this a win for Trump or is this a loss? Because both sides, you look at the commentary after this framework of a deal was reached, even without all of the information being out there, and the people that thought Trump was doing a great job and that they liked to see how he was approaching this entire situation feel vindicated. They say this was a total win. He went in, like he does every time, asking for much more than he expects to get in the negotiation, and then when they dial it back and find an agreement of sorts, it's usually what he wanted in the first place. Mm-hmm. But you also have the people who were totally disgusted by how the president went about this and felt that he was really alienating our allies and damaging the presence of the United States in the world. They looked at this news from yesterday and said, what a total loser. We already had a lot of these agreements worked out with Denmark regarding our military use in Greenland. And if anything, he harmed us while working his way to a deal that we already had. So I asked the text line, how did you feel about the deal? Do you think he won or lost? And I got some responses from you. Joel says, he said Quinn probably doesn't like the deal. I haven't checked in whether Quinn Hillier liked the deal or not. And he said it was a win, Joel did. Leo said, DJT made me proud in Davos. He took Europe to the woodshed.
He did.
With a thumbs up emoji. Martin says, let the people of Greenland vote on the U.S. buying them. Several hundred million dollars divided by 57,000 people looks pretty good for them. And Summerdale Tony says it's a classic negotiation deal that Trump does. He threatens to blow the place up to start with and then works his way back to a deal that works for him. Keep those texts coming. 251-343-0106. There's a story in the New York Post and several others that kind of tries to
explain
dial in exactly what this deal could eventually look like. So U.S. military bases in Greenland would be considered sovereign U.S. territory under the terms of the proposed deal. This comes from The Telegraph, which you mentioned earlier. The deal would allow the U.S. to perform military operations, gather intelligence, and train soldiers without obtaining permission from Denmark. And they say potentially allow the U.S. to expand into and develop land in mineral-rich parts of the Arctic island. A European official said that Rutte proposed Denmark transferring to the U.S. sovereignty over Pituffik Space Base in northern Greenland. The strategically important installation has been under U.S. control since a 1951 defense agreement with Denmark, but the land legally belongs to the Danes. Trump actually used a line that we kept saying over these last 2 weeks. There's a difference in leasing the land and owning the land, right? And he said that he said as much in that speech. Denmark would also give the U.S. sovereignty over, quote, small pockets of land for the construction of new U.S. military bases. That's according to the New York Times. They say the compromise, if finalized, would fall short of Trump's original goal of complete and total control of Greenland, which the president argued was necessary for U.S. national security. The expansion of U.S. territory, however, would mark the first time that's happened since World War II, when the Northern Mariana Islands were taken from Japan. The proposed deal mirrors a 1960 pact between the United Kingdom and Cyprus, which grants the U.K. sovereignty over two military bases on the Mediterranean island. And they mention here the Ruta quote that you just played on the air earlier today. And the NATO Secretary General vowed, we will get this done. So not full, complete, and total control of Greenland, but it sounds like expanding on the pacts that were made all the way back in the 1950s.
And those who want to make the point that Trump was rude to the leaders, where it's uncomfortable to watch the leader of the United States address those people in that way. I think that what you want to try and add into this whole scenario is this is not the Europe of 30 years ago. Like, we're used to certain ways people going about things in a more presidential way and all that. And if Trump's going to, if he's going to take a dump in his yard, at least it's in the United States, don't do it over there. This is a different world. And I think Trump is alarmed by how far Europe has fallen. And I think that what he's probably doing basically is, you can say he's being rude, but I think what he's trying to do is he wants a strong Europe. And he wants to see that process begin. And a lot of that process is going to be a reversal from what they've been in the last 20, 15 years?
Well, and also, you know, we were talking the other day and someone said, basically, we don't need allies anymore. I don't think Trump feels that way at all. I think he wants our allies
to be strong. Yes.
So that we don't have to be as involved.
I think that is what it is. So he's talking to
you need
to
a jab if you're going to have a haymaker.
Exactly.
And we don't have any jabs right now. We just have our haymaker.
So he's trying to get them riled and rallied up with where they look. They now have their assignment, and they want to please this man because they want things to get a whole lot smoother. They don't like all this rhetoric. They don't like being embarrassed on the world stage. Maybe Germany will get it together a little bit. Maybe they'll do it in spite of Trump and become a stronger group of nations.
Yeah, and I also wonder, too, though, was there another element of this yesterday where maybe these countries did have more leverage than we're letting on? I don't know if, you know, these discussions and kind of flirting with China more, did that drive Trump to maybe agreeing to a deal lesser than what he wanted to? Was it Carney or no, Starmer that was in China?
The Brits were kind of embarrassed that their guy wasn't even there.
Keir Starmer.
Yeah, Keir Starmer was look at the optics of that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make it. No, I can't make it because I'm going to be in China.
Yeah.
That looks pretty bad.
And it came, after Aviator Boy there, Macron, in his speech said, basically, yeah, we're going to cozy up a little closer with China because we can't depend on America. So I don't know if some of that talk may have drove Trump to laying off a little bit and working on this framework of the deal. But I don't know. That's something that I guess we'll have to wait.
Well, don't you think that they would be touting that victory to save a little face? Don't you think that they would be very vocal about all that if they felt like that compromised Trump and brought him down a little bit? Because if they don't, and as things sit right now, it's like he just eviscerated them. They've got to be pretty embarrassed by the whole thing. Now they may be happy that an agreement is done, and now what's done is done. At the same time, I think if the European leaders had anything to say on Trump, like, well, I will be honest with you, we think he caved because of this, I think that would become public.
Yeah, you would think so.
To save face.
Let's hit the break. Got a lot of text to get to on the other side. 251-343-0106. You're listening to Mobile Mornings.
Ascension Technologies today for information on video surveillance products that can help keep both your physical and digital assets safe. For a free assessment and site visit, call 243-4224. Local IT and security. Ascension Technologies, AESBL license number 2223.
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Owig.
I don't get around to Besson or not. Chris from Orange Beach. The question must be asked, what is Gavin Newsom doing in Switzerland besides, of course, looking like a fool?
Well, it was a 2028 move by him. He wanted to go and look presidential. Yeah. And, you know, California has, they say the world's fourth largest economy. I know it ranks way on up there. I don't know if world, but that's what I heard.
He does not have the respect of one
Scott Bessent.
Scott Bessent.
Let me play that clip for you really quickly too, because Bessent.
I mean, it's gloves off.
So, and I think he went about it well. This was the way he went after Newsom. Not the first thing on my mind, but here's how Scott Bessent answered a question about Gavin Newsom showing up in Davos and trying to show up the president. And let me see if I can up here.
Governor Newsom, who strikes me as Patrick Bateman meets Sparkle Beach Ken, may be the only Californian who knows less about economics than Kamala Harris. He is too smug, too self-absorbed, and too economically illiterate to know anything.
Thank you very much.
Let me know if you need any further clarification.
So the Patrick,
Governor Newsom, who strikes me as Patrick Bateman.
Bateman, right. So that's the, now I'm forgetting the name of the movie, but the Christian Bale movie where he's the finance guy who's like murdering a bunch of people. Okay. So he says he looks like a creep like that.
Yeah.
Is it American Psycho? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, American Psycho. And
then Sparkle Beach Ken, which I didn't
even know Sparkle Beach Ken. It would, you know, Bessent, God bless you. Maybe in his day, he had a Sparkle Beach Ken himself.
But he may have.
He may, you know, he makes that reference. It's hilarious. And again, just humiliating for Newsom.
Yeah. And Bessent, I mean, he is one of my favorites in the administration. Mm-hmm. He has been all gas, no brakes. Yep. He's been hilarious and I think doing a good job. A lot of texts here. Texter said, Germany doesn't have 6 fighter jets to field for their own defense, yet they all get free health care, education, 6 weeks paid vacation, 3 years paid paternity leave. It's time they pay their own way. If you cannot defend it, you cannot keep it, ask the Cherokee. Damn Yankee says, Dan, you are correct. Today's Europe is not what it was 50 years ago. France is a joke. Germany and the UK have become overrun with Muslims. If it was a football game, China is first in goal for taking over Europe. Mm. Text here on the other side says, Trump's weak. The man is a bully, always caving. All this mess is a distraction from the Epstein files.
No, it's not.
How can court order the Clintons and not Trump? Referencing the Clintons being potentially held in contempt of Congress, depending on a House vote coming up here next.
With some Democrats voting alongside Republicans to haul them in.
Larry from Daphne, sending a Google. California's economy is the world's fourth or fifth largest by GDP. Thank you for that fact check there, Larry. Chris says, and you read that one, what is Gavin Newsom doing? Jason says, I hate to go full Ricky, but isn't this all really about protecting the elites that live beyond the ice wall? He sends with the laughing emoji. Jason also commenting on a local story with the Daphne gas tax going up by a couple cents, bringing the city gas tax per gallon to 3 cents per gallon. Said, good morning, guys. These gas tax hikes in Baldwin County aren't sounding like red state moves to me. Also, how much will they be sharing with Mobile and the surrounding areas for the endless traffic congestion we have to deal with as the drones march to and from the beach? Sean says, give every native-born resident of Greenland a percent of oil and mineral revenue, and every one of them will vote to become a state. You know, they've been for years and years and years wanting their own independence from Denmark. And I wonder if that independence streak has them saying no deal to any country taking us over. I think Greenland just wants to be Greenland and own themselves. But money talks, right?
Money talks. And what's in the mindset? For the life of me, I can't understand why you would want to live there. Really?
Well, I'm sure it has its perks, especially if you were born there. I mean, for starters, there's only 57,000 people there.
I mean,
that's pretty nice.
You know everybody's name, you know? I mean, you know everybody's name. It's Mayberry. In the middle of the sea.
Frozen Mayberry.
Yeah, it's Frozen Mayberry. 8:30 with Dan and Dalton.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Got some tickets to give away in a bit, so y'all get ready.
Yeah, if you want to hear Pat Benatar at the Sanger Monday night, stay tuned. We'll be giving tickets away, a pair of tickets here, before the end of the show.
8:35, Dan and Dalton, and our Thursday guest.
Yeah, Rob Holbert with Lanyap joins us, and another absolutely stacked edition of Lanyap on stands now and online at lanyapmobile.com. Plenty to talk about and plenty to investigate. Have the legislative session ongoing. It's campaign season, so endorsements flying all around. And, of course, the same local investigative reporting you get week in and week out. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Doing great.
Great. So why don't we start with the cover story here has the byline of one Rob Holbert. And landscaping dispute could cost couples their homes. What'd you find here?
Well, it's really an interesting story, but there's two couples actually over at a place called the Fairhope Motor Coach Resorts. They're in court right now, two separate lawsuits, but in one of them, the judge has ruled that they owe $305,000 in fines and another $12,000 in attorney's fees because of a landscaping job that they did that was about a $10,000 landscaping job that went on to common property. And so the whole thing is really kind of based in, according to the folks that are being sued, is they think it all has to do with a fight over service dogs that has been going on for about 3 years. That they have service dogs. These people are both men involved are disabled veterans, and they have.
You there, Rob? We might have lost you.
Yeah, we might have to
see if we can get Rob back on. Oh, there we are. Hey, Rob, we lost you about 15 seconds ago. So you said both of these are disabled U.S. Army vets, and that this might have to do with the dispute with the Owners Association there regarding their service dog. Sorry, can you continue?
That's what they say. You know, that they've had this lawsuit going on in federal court, and that this issue with the landscaping is just an opportunity to try to kick them out of their homes and take their homes from them. It's pretty wild. I mean, in terms of, you know, they estimate the value of the house at being near $700,000, and this landscaping job that was done was a $10,000 landscaping job.
Yeah.
And I think you can see some before and after pictures in there and judge for yourself whether you think it looks better before or after. But one guy that's involved, he didn't even do the landscaping, he says. He said he had a plan to do it, but then it got rejected, so he never did it. But they still got fined $300,000 for landscaping stuff. It's kind of a crazy story, and you kind of look at it and go, is this, you know, I'm surprised that the judge would go along.
Rule that way. So they did $10,000 worth of landscaping, and in the end, the judge says you owe $312,000. Now,
yeah, 317.
Man,
yes. And your house is going to be sold at auction.
Oh my gosh, this is terrible. But that was the judge's kind of wild. That sounds like that would be a rumor going around the clubhouse. But no, this is actually the judge's ruling, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I've had the ruling. You know, it's Judge Tankowski, the presiding judge over there. He ruled that way. You know, I don't have the other side of the story because they won't talk about it. I talked to them all and called them and wrote to them, and they just said, we don't want to talk about this. So
it's called Fairhope Motor Coach Resort.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's a pretty fascinating story. Folks can read it. It's one of those things where you look at it and say, is this really, I get that there's a lot of hostility at the motor coach resort between folks over the dogs and other issues, but you do kind of wonder, is this an equitable solution?
Man, what a crazy cover story. I think folks need to pick up the latest edition, read through that. I'm sure that is not the last we'll hear from that story. Also, you know, who's been in the news a lot this week, and maybe because of the legislative session beginning in Montgomery last week, but Katie Britt and Tommy Tuberville as well, who came down this week, both talking up the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway project and saying they're pushing the feds to kind of help speed this along and get the loan that we need to get started on that. But Britt also in the news and a story posted by Grant McLaughlin just a few hours ago, Britt secures dredge project funds for Mobile Bay. So she's been busy and busy in service of not just the state, but Southwest Alabama and the Gulf. And the port.
Yeah, she's been pretty active in the concept of, you know, the issue of thin layer placement, you know, aka mud dumping in the bay, and has made some efforts to see that end, or at least see it curtailed to a great degree. That legislature in Montgomery right now, the bill that Chris Elliott has pushed, and that would make it so that, you know, 70% of the dredge spoils has to be used for either, you know, taken out to sea or to be used for other beneficial projects.
Yeah.
But the port is now strongly against it. The Port Authority has moved against that. The bill has gotten out of committee again, but now it has a caveat in it that if it can only happen if the Army Corps of Engineers says they have enough money to do the other. To dispose the other way. And so, you know, you turn into a situation where you say, oh, well, you know, if they come and say, we don't have enough money, so we can just continue to do thin layer placement.
Yeah.
They, you know, the port's saying it could cost $65 million a year to to continue to do something other than what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I guess at some point you have to look at it and say, is there a cost of doing business? You know, it's $65 million, but it seems to me you're putting it directly, you know, is the bay worth $65 million a year? Is it worth that?
Yeah.
You know, is it worth polluting the bay, or, you know, as people who work on it say, hey, this is destroying the bay. It's doing a lot of damage to the bay. You know, those are the questions that have to be answered.
Yeah, one question I would have, it's the Corps that's giving us this $65 million number, or the port?
It's the port, what we've heard.
Okay. Right. I mean, I'm just saying they can put whatever price tag they want on it, and how would you know? It's like
are questions. You know, those are questions that people have, and I think it's – but it also, when you know, they talk about the ports, just the tax – revenue that it brings into the state is $2.6 million or $2.5 billion, I'm sorry, a year. You know, you're talking about a couple of percentage points in terms of disposal, and you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money that have gone into deepening this port and doing all those other things. And you know, I mean, I think I get people may have sticker shock and say, oh, it's $65 million to do something else with it, and you know. But, I mean, this is a tremendous amount of money coming through the port. The, you know, deepening of the ship channel is to bring in bigger ships to make even more money. So, you know, it becomes an even
smaller percentage of the overall
of that pie. You know, so, you know, the question is, I mean, I think there needs to be some equitable solution here that says, hey, you know, if there's a real issue in the bay, and you know, and that still is a debated issue, whether putting the dredge spoils back into the bay is good for the bay, bad for the bay. I mean, the Corps at one point in the 80s said it was bad for the bay to do it, and they took it out to the Gulf and dumped it, and then they changed their minds and said, no, it's actually better for the bay if we dump it in here, and by the way, it's also the cheapest way to do it, so let's just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, too, and not to change the subject too greatly here, but the city council meeting this week, would love your thoughts on something that District 1 Councilman Corey Penn has proposed. And this is something that Sean has talked about a lot over the years, and we have at FM Talk 106.5, holding these council meetings when so many people are at work. I know, and Dan mentioned it this morning, a lot of the cities in Baldwin County, I think including Gulf Shores, have their council meetings, I believe, on Monday nights or Monday evenings, like 4 or 5 o'clock. And Penn says, hey, at least once a quarter, we need to hold a meeting after folks get out of work. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea to do it, you know, once in a while. I think it's kind of disruptive to talk about doing it every week. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality of who's going to show up once in a while, you know, or just every week. I mean, who shows up now? But I covered nighttime meetings the early part of my career, and I can tell you people don't show up for the most part at city council meetings unless they're upset about something.
Yeah, so, nighttime meetings. I could see those being not as, you know, not so greatly attended, but when they are attended, if somebody's really upset about something, they could get a little wild.
That's always what it is. I mean, it's the only time that city council meeting, your water board meeting, any of those types of meetings are attended is when people are upset. But, you know, that, you know, it's, I think it's a good idea to have it. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think I would be in favor of doing it every single week, because it really does create a bigger issue just to have to do that after the fact. You know, it's a lot on the people who have to go and do it. I mean, you got a meeting that goes till 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's a lot. And mm-hmm. I don't know that there's really much good that's coming out of it. Just to say we're going to do it on a normal basis when people are like, I mean, how many people even bother to pay attention to what the city council does on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, we do, and Kyle Hamrick does a great job week in and week out and the rest of it.
Penn was only proposing once every quarter. So.
Yeah, just once a quarter.
I mean, it makes sense. Once a quarter is fine. Let's see what happens. I'll be surprised if many people show up if it's not a hot-button issue.
Mm. Right, I agree with that.
Also, with campaign season really heating up here, you know, had Doug Jones and Tommy Tuberville in town over these last 5 days, but an endorsement coming down in the race for that soon-to-be-open Senate seat, and Trump backing Barry Moore, it was already, you know, Marshall, even though the polling, I think, undecided, has 46% in the last poll, but Steve Marshall had a good 20-point lead on Barry Moore in that last poll as well. What does that mean for Barry Moore? You know, does this put him in the driver's seat, or does it just make it more competitive between him and Marshall?
I have no idea. You know, I mean, it's in terms of what that means, it's hard to tell at this point, and whether, I mean, they both are, you know, they both talk about the closeness to Trump, and I mean, goodness, you know, I mean, Marshall went to his trial and sat behind him and hung out there. And I mean, I'm sure he's a little heartbroken over not getting it after he spent so much time doing that instead of doing his job here. But the, I just think it's like, you know, I don't know how much people put into that. I mean, is it going to make up a 20-point difference if there's really a 20-point difference?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think it will, but it's, you know, we'll see where it goes. I mean, it's still a long way out.
And we've talked about
a lot of campaigning to do.
Yeah, remember, I mean, did Trump endorse Brooks before endorsing Britt? I can't recall how that whole saga went down. It looked like, you know, Mo Brooks had a massive lead going into that race.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And then later on, the Britt endorsement came down from Trump, but it may have been well after he endorsed Brooks.
I think you're right.
Well, I think I think the endorsement of Britt came primarily after it was pretty clear that Britt was going to win.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think we've seen this a lot in recent years, is, you know, people say, oh, this is the prohibitive favorite. This person's way out in front. They're going to win. And then they get their clock cleaned when it comes time. You know, mm-hmm. It's just the people aren't really thinking about those things at this point. I mean, we're still
months.
10 months away from the election. And, you know, I think the polling at this point is.
Hey, Rob, maybe the general public is not thinking about those things right now. The political world is, because hours after Trump, Club for Growth came out for Barry Moore as well.
Yeah.
And that probably means more money rolling his way.
Yeah, and they've backed him the last two races he's mm-hmm. been in, too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we all sit around and we get our microscopes out and examine the stuff and walk it up. I mean, the average person doesn't care if the farmers did it or the, you know, the Club for Growth, or they don't know. You know, they start to look at this stuff at when it gets closer to the elections.
Yes.
And I think that's why you see, you know, oh, it was Jeff Sessions is going to win the race. Oh, well, you know, he got beat by Tuberville. You know, you get, it just goes on and on. I mean, the list is over and over again. People who, you know, a year out, we say this person's going to be it, and then they don't end up winning. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. I think, you know, personally, I think there's a, both guys have a record people should look at and give some consideration to, and there's a lot that there's a lot there to look at.
Rob, good stuff as always, and let folks know, not just, you know, for Lagniappe coverage, but Mardi Gras parade coverage. We'll get rolling in Mobile a week from tomorrow, and where can folks get that information? Also, how can they sign up for Lagniappe online?
Well, yeah, if you want all the Mardi Gras info is at mobilemask.com, go check it out, and we have tons of info there, all the schedules, etc. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can go to Lagniappe Daily if you want to catch up with everything we're doing right now. There's plenty of news hitting just every few minutes.
Thanks, Rob, appreciate it, and we'll talk again in a week.
All right, guys, y'all have a great day.
Awesome.
Right.
I mentioned Jared Hudson is in that race, the former Navy SEAL. It doesn't look like he's backing out.
No, he wants to debate.
Yeah.
No notes, just debates. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's do this
too. That's the way I do it.
Before we go to the
no
break.
No notes.
No notes. Sometimes we need them. Let's go to the break. Let's give tickets away.
Oh, okay.
Pat Benatar, Neil Giraldo, live at the Mobile Sanger, Monday night, 7:30 show. Give away a pair of tickets to caller number 3 at 251-343-0106. Pair tickets to see Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo live at the Mobile Sanger Monday night at 7:30. Caller number 3, those tickets are yours.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
You've got a lot of texts, including this one from Matt. Dan and Dalton, you got to read that story. It's unreal. Talking about people that live at Fairhope Motor Coach Resort.
Mm-hmm.
Rob was talking about that. I guess it's on the cover of Lagniappe. I can't believe the judge actually is sticking with those penalties. Offer actually improving common area grounds. That's Matt on the text line.
Yeah, that sounds like an absolutely insane
story. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Congratulations to Joey picking up that pair of tickets to see Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo Monday night at the Mobile Sanger Theater. We'll give away our final pair of tickets tomorrow for that show, which is coming up Monday night. But congrats, Joey, on the win. Moon Pie Minute's still rolling and rolling, well, all day long and all Mardi Gras long, all the way up and to and through Ash Wednesday. Reminder, we have them listed at fmtalk1065.com along with the parade schedule. But day in and day out, if you miss or you want to go back and listen to Moon Pie Minutes, done so well by Stephen McNair,
yes,
we list them there, fmtalk1065.com, and click the Moon Pie Minutes tab. And they did make a change because of this weather that's coming in Saturday. And thanks, Jack, and several of you reminding us on the text line this morning. The Dolphin Island People's Parade, they've moved up an hour on Saturday.
Okay.
So it will roll at noon rather than 1 p.m. on Saturday. If you're making plans to be down there on the island for that parade, just know it'll roll a little earlier than scheduled. And Michael, too, telling us this morning, I wanted to give him the shout-out for this. He says, the AHSAA bowling playoffs start today with 6A, 7A regionals in Vestavia Hills.
Huh.
Said, I'm obviously rooting for our local boys teams, McGill Toolin and Mary G. Montgomery, both rolling that ball once the 6A, 7A. You already do, Dan, such a great job with Jim Cox calling the games, mm-hmm. high school football games, which some legislation might change how late into the season you get to call those games.
Yep.
But you also have a little experience, you know, emceeing some bowling events.
I do.
Think you could tie these two together. You'd make a heck of a bowling announcer.
Well, and thank you. But yeah, for Junior Achievement, I've emceed our bowling event, and it's a lot of fun. Now, do the AHSAA, do they look the other way at the bowling finals when the McGill team wins and then they get a pitcher? Because bowling, you know, you drink beer when you bowl, and yeah. I understand there are only 17 or maybe 18 at the most, But if you win the title.
Well, remember, was it Moody that sparked up some cigars after winning?
Yes, it was.
And they got, you know, slammed with
so
the fine.
I guess a pitcher of Budweiser was off. That's off the table altogether. Yeah,
but if you break out, you know, the cigars after rolling a perfect 300, which has there ever been a perfect 300 game in the AHSA? I'm asking you, you would actually know.
Yeah,
but I wonder if there's been a perfect game.
Well, I've now become the king of bowling trivia, but I don't know that I got that information. But I do. I think last year the bowling was down here out in West Mobile. Some of the finals.
Yeah, I need to get back out there on the lanes. It's been a while.
You good bowler?
No. Okay, I mean, checking. I don't need the bumpers. So
no, I don't
does
need
that
the bumpers.
Place me
either.
In the top 50th percentile or what?
I roll it down there, and it's just such a lame. Like it's a changeup, and I'm giving it all my power and might.
Well, last time, you know, went with a bunch of the little kids for a birthday party. I had to keep walking down the lane because their bowling balls weren't making it all the way. So I had to go unjam the alley.
That's funny.
Very dangerous.
8:59, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Morning.
April Marie Fogel in for Jeff Poor today. She's on the way next.